Good evening, everyone. I'm going to call the meeting to order. Welcome to the public meeting on our 2020 proposed budget. Just before we get started, I just want to touch on a few things. If you were at our meeting on Tuesday, I had highlighted a few things that have changed in our procedural bylaw. I'll just repeat about the recording. You are permitted to record meetings with the permission of the clerk. That permission needs to be requested by noon the day before the meeting. We are also recording audio, so if you are making comments later in the evening, we'll ask that you come to the podium here behind Councillors Girard and Ferguson and use the microphone so that we have a recording of your comments. And as this is a public meeting, it is for the public to give us your comments and ask your questions. This isn't the council has had lots of opportunity with the budget, so we're not participating in the discussion. We're here to listen tonight. We're going to start the evening with a presentation from staff, and from there we will go to, as I say, questions from the public. If staff are able to provide a response or details this evening, they will, but they may wish to provide that response at a later date in writing. And of course, comments are received by council tonight as well. If you do wish to speak, there's a sign-in sheet just on the table on your way in the door. We need your name and your address if you wish to speak. So we'll be collecting that up after the presentation. With that, attendance.
We have all in attendance, Your Worship.
Thank you. And I'm looking for a mover and seconder for the approval of the agenda this evening. Councillor Ferguson, Councillor Dalgety, all those in favour? Thank you. And disclosure of pecuniary interest and general nature thereof, you can make that statement at this time if it pertains to yourself. And with that, I will pass it over to our treasurer, Rhonda Whitmarsh.
Thank you, Your Worship.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nikki. So tonight, we'll be going over our 2019 accomplishments. We'll discuss long-term planning and asset management. We'll review the 2020 proposed budget as it stands right now. We'll talk about municipal taxation and water and sewer rates proposed for 2020 and next steps. So in 2019, we followed the municipality's asset management plan and continued to provide funding for infrastructure, particularly with regard to roads, bridges, water, and wastewater. We undertook road, water, and sewer work on Victoria Street. We completed road work on Ramsey Concession 11A and Concession 12, as well as bridge work on the Shaw Bridge and the Dasher Board replacement at the Stewart Community Center. We opened new daycare space at the Holy Name of Mary School. We replaced aging equipment, a half-ton truck in Public Works, and lawn mowing equipment in Parks and Recreation. We completed the water storage environmental assessment and started the detailed design. Completed water looping on Concession 11A Ramsey between Ottawa Street and Honeyborn. And we continued the water meter replacement program. We now have 2,313 radio frequency meters with approximately 475 remaining to be changed. We'll talk a little bit about long-term financial plan and asset management plans. The long-term financial plan, water and sewer rate study, and asset management plan were last reviewed in 2015 or 2016, as noted on the slide. They all require updating in 2020. Collectively, these plans and studies work together to provide the financial foundation for the municipality with the long-term goal of financial sustainability. I'll explain this more in the next slide. So the asset management plan, long-term financial plans, that includes the water and sewer rate study, and the annual budget are developed following the direction of council through the approved strategic plan. The asset management plan is a projection, which is usually done over 10 years, for the replacement and maintenance of all capital assets, and is developed from information supplied by other studies, such as master planning documents and the development charges study. The long-term financial plan, again, usually 10 years, includes the capital asset needs determined from the asset management plan and also includes all the operational needs of the municipality. The operational needs are again provided by other studies and plans, such as information technology plans, human resource plans, operational reviews, and of course, trend analysis from previous years. The long-term financial plans also include a projection of the funding of revenue needed to pay for all of those expenses. And they include things like taxation, user fees, long-term debt, grants, water and sewer rates, development charges, and reserves. Since the expenses and revenues have already been determined through the long-term financial plan, and projected for 10 years, the annual budget process is simplified. Council, however, still needs to review the budget, which is pulled from those planning documents, to confirm the contents, which is completed annually through budget deliberations. The previous slide showed how all of the various studies and plans work together to working towards sustainability. To ensure that sufficient funds exist to operate, rehabilitate, and replace capital assets at the optimal time with the intention of achieving the lowest life cycle cost without reliance on long-term debt and other funding sources. In addition, they ensure that funds exist to follow the strategic direction of council and meet other legislative changes, growth needs, and service level demands. Not only do we need to develop the plans that were just referenced to establish the financial foundation, but we must also conduct a risk assessment, particularly with regard to capital assets, such as the risk of critical failure. So we need to look at those things and determine whether the priorities may shift in those planning documents as to when they should be replaced or rehabilitated. Internal controls also need to be reviewed to ensure that spending is being undertaken in a responsible and efficient manner. And lastly, the municipality should be developing and reviewing performance measures to ensure that we are staying in line with intended goals and strategies and reporting those measures to our residents. The municipality has not yet developed a benchmarking or performance measurement program for assets, but will be a requirement of the new asset management regulation passed by the province of Ontario. In addition, any provincial and federal funding opportunities require municipalities to submit their asset management plans as part of the process. Over the last few years, we have been increasing tax rates and water and sewer rates to invest in capital replacement and maintenance, as outlined in our asset management documents, and as a result, have been effectively improving the state of our infrastructure. There has been a shift in the number of assets that fall in the poor to fair category and an improvement in the do nothing or good category. This slide focuses on bridges and large structures, and their condition is categorized based on a bridge condition index, or BCI. You can see from the slide that poor bridges were at 24% in 2018, which has now been reduced to 14%, and good bridges went from 68% in 2018 to 79% in 2019. The municipality is responsible for 15 bridges and 11 large structures. Since 2013, the municipality has invested approximately $5.3 million on bridges. This chart shows the results of that investment. In 2013, bridges in poor condition were at 71% and are now down to 14%, and bridges in good condition went from 8% in 2013 up to 79%. Although less money has been spent on culverts or large structures, improvements can also be seen in this area. Those in the poor category went from 28% in 2013 down to 20% in 2019, and those in the good category went from 54% to 72%. Both paved and surface treated road conditions are based on a Riding Comfort Index, or RCI. An RCI of 1 to 5 requires replacement, 6 to 7 requires rehabilitation, and 8 to 10 is considered good and requires no work. Between 2018 and 2019, paved roads in the rehabilitation category went from 48% to 44%, and those in the good category went from 39% to 42%. To put replacement costs in context, 2019 tender results for a kilometer of urban road reconstruction, including a gravel base, asphalt, and related landscaping, is $1.2 million. The approximate cost for a single lift of asphalt on a 6.5 meter wide rural road is $205,000, which applies to about two-thirds of the paved road network of 93.6 kilometers. The total investment in paved roads since 2013 is approximately $3.4 million, and since 2013, paved roads in the poor category went from 20% down to 14%, and in the good category went from 22% up to 42%. In 2018, surface treated roads that required rehabilitation or replacement was at 56%, which has been reduced to 54% in 2019. Again, the approximate cost to surface treat 1 kilometer of road is $110,000, and the municipality has 93.1 kilometers of surface treated roads. Again, improvements have been made since 2013 on surface treated roads with an investment by the municipality of approximately $3 million. Surface treated roads in the good category since 2013 went from 15% to 46% in 2019. The municipality is unable financially to address the rehabilitation of all surface treated roads that are in the fair to poor category, meaning that the poor category has increased from 10% in 2013 to 34% in 2019. Funding is also provided through the water and sewer budget for improvements to water mains and sanitary sewer pipes. Since 2016, 1,250 meters of water mains has been replaced, 410 have been added, and 1,250 meters of sanitary sewers were replaced, and 655 were lined to extend their life, to avoid replacement. Again, the cost to replace a meter of water main is $1,600 and about $1,900 for a meter of sanitary sewers. Since 2016, the cost of water and sewer linear infrastructure replacements is approximately $4 million. Now we'll get into the actual 2020 budget. So why does a municipality budget? It's a legislated requirement under the Municipal Act, and all revenues and expenditures that are included in that budget document must equal. For fiscal accountability, so that we manage and optimize our human, financial, and physical resources. To implement the strategic direction of council. To implement the recommendations of other studies and plans that we've recently talked about, so financial plan, asset management plan, etc. To provide an annual work plan for staff, both operating and capital, to deliver services to our residents. And for internal control purposes, so we measure actual results against planned results and report any variances. There are many factors that influence the budget, such as growth requirements, property tax assessment base, long-term contracts, economic trends, the strategic plan, new programming requirements to deliver services, debt levels, staffing needs, planning for future capital through reserve allocations, pressure from external sources, legislative changes, along with the day-to-day needs of the municipality. Some of the cost drivers noted on this list are outside of the control of the municipality. Because budgets must balance, council considers options for funding, such as grants, and those are generally provided through the province, the federal government, and the county of Lanark. Unfortunately, the trend has been a decline in the availability of funds of grants to support capital. From user fees, and in 2020, council is proposing a 3% increase in water and sewer rates, consistent with previous years, and I'll be reviewing that a little later in the presentation. From development charges, which helps to pay for the cost of growth. Reserves, which are set aside in a previous budget year. Long-term financing, if it is appropriate and only for assets with long lives. Special charges are levies to raise funds for a specific purpose that council has identified, and taxation. And in 2020, council is proposing a 2.5% tax revenue increase. And that increase is consistent with 2019. And again, I'll discuss the impacts to the average taxpayer later in the presentation. As just mentioned, long-term financing is a funding tool used by municipalities to pay for the cost of capital, generally for those with a long life. For example, a bridge can have a life in excess of 60 years before replacement is needed again. A number of capital improvements for buildings, bridges, vehicles, and water and sewer replacements were long-term financed over the last few years as the work needed to be completed. Interest rates were low, and the municipality was not in a position to pay for the project outright. The funds were not in reserves, and an increase in taxation or water and sewer rates to pay for the project would have been too high. From this slide, actual debt levels in 2016 were $15.1 million and are expected to increase to $24.8 million by the end of 2020, of which $12.6 million is for water and sewer projects. In 2020, the water storage facility, net of development charges, is proposed to be long-term financed. The total municipal operating and gross capital budget for 2020, including water and sewer, is $31.2 million. It is being funded through municipal taxation and grants in lieu of $11.2 million, long-term debt of $3.2 million, from reserves and development charges of approximately $4.2 million, user fees and grants of $12 million, and those grants are for things such as the gas tax and the Ontario Municipal Partnership Fund, and user fees are for waste management, building, septage, water and sewer, daycare, and recreation. This chart depicts the 2020 operating and capital budgets by department. The roads and public works areas of responsibility, including water and sewer, waste management, and roads, accounts for 58% of the entire 2020 budget. In terms of capital, again, it's about $11 million, just over $11 million, and roads and public works areas of responsibility represent 85% of the capital budget. Some of the projects being considered this year, gravel in Ramsey and Pakenham wards for $310,500. Road rehabilitation, including pavement, surface treatment, and microsurfacing of $1.4 million. The Levi Bridge, culvert guardrails, and drain repairs of $1.3 million, just under. The replacement of plow trucks, $445,000. park work on Mill Run, Riverfront, and Gemmo for $572,000. Facility maintenance at a number of municipally owned facilities, which are listed there on the slide, for $395,000. And we are proceeding with live streaming and the redesign of our website for $75,000. The pavement renewals that are being considered, there's just one this year, which is Five Arches Drive in Pakenham for 0.4 kilometers. For surface treatment, we have Golden Line Road, 760 meters north of Elmont Road to March Road. Concession 11A in Ramsey, and I apologize, the slide there should read 4 kilometers. And concession 11 north in Pakenham, which should read 1.1 kilometers. You did fix the slide for me. Thank you. And microsurfacing on concession 4A in Ramsey for 1.2 kilometers, concession 5A in Ramsey of 3 kilometers, and Main Street Almont for 1.4 kilometers. Again, we have a number of water and sewer projects that are being proposed in 2020. So the big one is the water storage construction for $4 million. Sanitary sewer repairs of $230,000. Gemmo's Bay Pump Station and Twin Force Main Repair, $130,000. Aqua Capital, which is for water, sewer, and the wastewater treatment plant, of $150,000. Wastewater treatment plant repairs, and again, they're listed on the slide. There's a number of smaller repairs, $333,500. Annual maintenance programs, and that's for cammering and well sampling, $57,000. The continuation of our radio frequency meter program, $39,000. And an update to the water and sewer rate study, $25,000. I'm sure everybody knows how property taxes are calculated, so we'll just quickly go over this slide. It's the property's assessed value times municipal rates, education, county, with the waste management charge added after that calculation. Not all of the tax revenue collected annually is for the municipality. This slide shows the approximate breakdown between the county and school boards, the municipality, and policing. So municipality is roughly 39%, with policing at almost 9%. So now we get to what the impact is on the average taxpayer based on a 2.5% revenue increase. So the average residential assessment increase from 2019 to 2020 is 5.69%, making the average assessed value of a home in Mississippi Mills $364,000. And see if I can point you right there, $364,000. Because the assessment increase of 5.69% is higher than the proposed tax revenue increase of 2.5%, the tax rate for 2020 is expected to decrease. So in 2019, the tax rate was 0.0522898 and is going to 0.0605589. So there to there. It is estimated that the average taxpayer will see an increase in municipal taxes of 2.2% over 2019, or $40 for the year, which translates to just over $3 a month. This slide, I present this slide every year, and it just shows our positioning compared to the municipalities in the County of Lanark, and this reflects 2019 tax rates. So Mississippi Mills was not the highest or the lowest. We are right, let's see if I can get us right there in the middle. And our positioning is not expected to change in 2020. So from the previous slide, the total average taxes for the year for Mississippi Mills is $1,844 That translates to $153.66 a month. And the next two slides just break down that cost by municipal service area. So emergency and protective services are roughly $37, and that includes fire, police, bylaw, and other protections such as animal control, that kind of thing. Recreation and curling, which includes parks, trails, programs, and events, is about $17 a month. Planning, so planning services and heritage, is about $5. Economic development is just under $4. Childcare is 77 cents. Roads and public works, so that includes roads and bridge maintenance, winter control, street and traffic lights, is $54, just about $55 a month. The library is about $7.68, almost $8. Admin and council and admin buildings is $21, and allocations to reserves almost $6, $5.50. So as I mentioned previously, the proposed water and sewer rate increase is 3%. This increase is was forecast in our rate study and is also consistent with previous year's allocations. Before I get into the slide and how it translates, I just want to reiterate that the water and sewer area of the budget is 100% funded through water bills and other revenues that are pertinent to the water and sewer area, and no money comes from taxation to support water and sewer. So from the slide, you can see that there's two parts to your water and sewer charge, the first being the base charge and the next being the consumption charge. Base charge is going up from 608 to 632, or almost 4%, and the consumption rate, 1190 per 1,000 gallons to 1209, or 1.59%. Overall, the average user is 32,200 gallons, so going from 990/118 in 2019 to just over $1,000 in 2020. Which is $30 for the year, or $5 for every 2 month billing. So in the upcoming year, we are going to continue to review service delivery options and pursue efficiencies within departments. We're going to continue to pursue federal and provincial grant opportunities as they become available. We're going to update the long-term financial plan, asset management plan, and develop some performance indicators as required by the new asset management regulation. And we're going to update the water and sewer rate study. And that concludes my presentation.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Before we go to public questions and comments, I'd like to ask the Director of Public Works, Mr. Bergon, to provide just some brief comments about the water storage facility infrastructure that's included in the 2020 proposed budget. It was certainly something that Council had a lot of discussion around, and I think there's a lot of interest in the community about this piece of infrastructure. And just to repeat what Rhonda had said, this is if you pay a water bill, this is the people who are going to be paying for this infrastructure. It's not part of taxation, but still a lot of interest. So I wonder if you could give us a high-level review of that.
Thank you, Mayor Lowry.
Thank you.
Just as background, water storage amounts, such as what we have in our water tower, are predicated on design guidelines by the province, the Ministry of Environment and Conservation and Parks. For an urban center like ours, where potable water is supplied through our water mains, as is fire protection. So back in 2012, we had an infrastructure master plan completed, which was based on the growth projections at the time. And in that master plan, the water reservoir, or the water storage deficit, rather, was identified, and a new water reservoir was predicted for a 5 to 10 year period subsequent to the report, at a cost of between $4 and $6 million. So at the time, the water and sewer rate included, the rate study included that amount and the water reservoir, as did the DC bylaw, so that the infrastructure. We were well ahead of the game. We knew that the storage deficit would be occurring, and we were starting to collect for it and put money aside for it. So in 2017, the infrastructure master plan was then updated because we wanted to make sure that the growth projections used in 2012, we weren't building any infrastructure too soon or any infrastructure too late. So what happened in 2017 is it did show that we hadn't grown early on in that period between 2012 and 2015 as much as what we thought we would have grown, but we were catching up quickly because we were having a lot of building permits, a lot of subdivisions going. So it confirmed that we would be in a storage shortfall somewhere between the period of 2018 to 2022. So that shortfall is based on how much growth we get. So that includes commercial growth, institutional growth, as well as industrial growth, as well as population growth. But we always whittle it back down to an equivalent population amount. The threshold that we're seeing, that we were predicting in the report, was around that 6,000 people mark for Almont. And just in looking at the building permits issued, confirming with the director of planning, we are reaching that threshold now. We are getting to the point where we have 6,000 persons living in Almont. And so we are at that point where the storage needs to be, the additional storage needs to be provided to allow for growth to continue. So what we did subsequent to that, as soon as we confirmed the amount, is we began the process. It's not instantaneous. You have to go through a lot of loops. So we completed an environmental assessment in 2018 that was completed in early 2019. It was undertaken in 2018. And what it did is it looked at all the options for storage, and it identified a preferred alternative behind the Almont Fire Station. And one of the reasons, first of all, a storage location anywhere within Almont will service all of Almont. It is not just for lands to the west of the river, just like the storage that we have right now at the elevated tank is not just for lands on the east side of the river. So what it does do, though, is we only have one high-pressure main that crosses the Macklin Bridge that services the west side of the municipality of Almont. No, town of Almont, if you wish. The other main that crosses at back and short bridges is restricted by pressure-reducing valves. So because that area is lowlands, there were pressure-reducing valves put in many years ago to control the amount of pressure there. But as you come back up the hill, you don't have enough pressure to service that area and meet your fire flows that you need. So that high-pressure main is the only one at the Macklin Bridge to service the west side of the river with high pressure. If for some reason there is a service interruption of that water main, the ability for the water storage tank on the existing one to provide the necessary fire protection to the west side of the river is greatly impaired. So by putting a reservoir on the west side of the river behind the Almont Fire Station, it covers that because you all of a sudden have the storage on that side. So if you do have that main go down, you're not relying on the other water tower to provide that additional protection. So that was one of the big reasons why that location was selected as the preferred alternative. So the estimated construction costs that rose out of the environmental assessment was roughly $3.6 million. That was back in 2018 dollars. But what we did see during the construction year of 2019 is a lot of jumps in construction costs. So before we came to budget for 2020, I went back to our consultants to confirm the amount because I certainly didn't want to come to council twice looking for money for this project. And it's a big investment. I wanted to make sure that it was budgeted properly. And sure enough, when they looked at the construction starts as similar projects over the 2019 period, they found that $3.6 million wasn't going to be enough. So we bumped that up to $4 million. So that's where the $4 million number comes up. That is also based on the detailed design that's currently underway. So it's well underway. We're looking around March for completion of the detailed design, so including tender. So we'll be ready to go, but that's where we're at with the project, and that's the reason we need the storage going forward.
Excellent. Thank you for that clarification. It's a big project, and we certainly want to make sure we're doing the right things at the right time. So this is your last moment to throw your name on that sheet before the clerk picks it up, if you're wanting to speak. All right. Thank you. And just a reminder, I'd ask if you have comments or questions to come up to the podium and use the microphone so that we capture your comments and questions. So first we have Mr. Steve Maynard. And if you can direct your questions to myself, your questions or comments.
I don't know if you have a limit, but I'll be about 7 minutes if that's acceptable. It certainly won't go over eight, I don't think. I've just added a few notes just to let you know that I won't be speaking until midnight. My name is Steve Maynard and I live in Elmont. I want to thank council and staff for holding this public meeting. And thanks to the concerned taxpayers who have come out in this freezing cold night to listen. I have a few areas that I have concerns, not necessarily questions. The first area is the water, the new water storage. And I'd like to thank Guy for always being courteous, professional, and prompt in his replies to me when I email him. Especially over the last few days, there's been 8 or 10 emails, and Guy's right on the ball with the information that I need.
Mr. Maynard, can you move the microphone so it's a little bit closer to you? Yeah, it'll only pick up if it's kind of resonating in the chamber.
I couldn't find batteries for my hearing aid, so I can't tell how.
It's okay. Yeah, you need to almost have the microphone pretty close to yourself.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
As Guy said, this budget includes a capital expenditure of $4 million for a new water storage facility. To increase Elmont's water storage capacity. There will be $3 million in new debt if this water storage is approved. Two of my concerns about the new water storage are that there's no detailed costing, so we really have no idea what the facility will cost. We are relying on a 2018 consultant's Class D estimate of $3.6 million, and as Guy said, that's been adjusted to $4 million. I don't think it's reasonable to base budget figures on a Class D estimate because Class D estimates have a plus or minus 30% error margin. So it's possible that this project will cost over $5 million. What do we do then if the storage comes in $1 million over budget? On the calculations to determine the storage needed, are based on potential growth. This is hidden inside the consultant's figures, but they say it's based on potential figures. The potential is commercial, industrial, and population. So, for example, the potential figures used for population assume that there'll be 758 new units by 2022, which translates to an increase in Elmont's population of 1,800 people. So between 2017 and 2022, a 5-year period, Elmont will grow from 5,149 people to almost 7,000 people. Then from 2023 to 2037, a 15-year window, Elmont will only grow an additional 1,575 people. Are these reasonable projections? I don't think so, because Lanark County has come down with a 3% per year population increase. These are very top-heavy figures, and as I say, the consultant assumes that everything is going to be built on by 2022. 758 new units is 200 a year. We don't reach 200 a year. I think we have once 186. My next area of concern is the debt. At the end of 2018, our long-term debt stood at $16.8 million. The debt is now budgeted to be $24.8 million by the end of 2020. So in two short years, our debt has increased by $8 million, almost 50%. I know it's a good theory to long-term finance assets, but it's troublesome because in 2018, our debt servicing costs were $1.7 million. In 2019, they were projected to be $1.85 million. And in 2020, they're projected to be $2.2 million. So the cost of debt servicing, which is paid through water fees and taxes, is going to increase by over $500,000 in 2 years. This isn't a one-time fee either. This will be a constant addition to the budgets. And it will just keep on growing as we continue to long-term finance. The third item I'm concerned with is there's $1.1 million in reserves that is referred to as working capital. We also have a $1 million line of credit that is also for working capital that is to bridge between February and June tax payments if we need it. I asked Ms. Whitmarsh a couple of years ago, I don't think it was last year, how often she remembers the $1.1 million working capital being touched and the $1 million line of credit being touched. And Ms. Whitmarsh said she can't remember it in her 17 years here. So we have this $1.1 million dedicated to working capital that is just sitting there. As far as I'm concerned, it's useless money. It's just sitting there doing nothing. We've never used it. And I can't see us ever using it if we haven't in 17 years. So I'm thinking perhaps we should look at that $1.1 million to put it in the budget to reduce our long-term debt, therefore our financing charges, or some other purpose, because it is really just cash sitting there doing nothing. I also am concerned about one-time expenses. In 2019, there were about $600,000 that were mostly one-time expenses for 2019 only. We included those $600,000 and just put it somewhere else. I don't think that's reasonable. Again, if they were only required for 2019, I don't think we should have budgeted that $600,000 again, because it was just a one-time expenditure in 2019, and that comes from the budget. We should have been able to save $600,000 on the budget by not spending that money again. My fifth area of concern is bridges. You know, it's good to say that we're replacing so many bridges, but there's an average cost of $1 million plus on these bridges. I think we should seriously consider box culverts. They are used all the time in Ottawa and Thunder Bay. If these big cities accept them as being compliant, I don't understand why we will not use them in this area. It'll save, on $1 million, it can save $700,000. Like, a box culvert can be built in 2 weeks, 3 weeks for $300,000. I find this budget gives almost every department their wish list. I certainly don't blame any department heads for starting with high budgets, because that's what you do at budget time. And that's what you do in any type of negotiation. You always use a high end and settle for a low end. But it's council's responsibility to provide a budget for only the must-haves. We are not in a financial position to grant the nice-to-have wishes. So I ask council to look more closely at the budget. It's very easy to achieve a 0% municipal tax increase, and I think it's also easy to allocate a substantial amount to reducing our debt. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you for your comments. Would you like to offer a comment?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, would you like me to answer some of the points?
If you'd like to, absolutely.
Thank you. So I will agree with Mr. Maynard that costing is based on a Class D estimate that was completed in 2018 for the water reservoir. Since then, as I mentioned in my briefing, I have had ongoing discussions with our consultant through detailed design and through the construction that has occurred during the 2019 season on similar projects. And they feel that $4 million is a reasonable amount based on what they're seeing on their detailed design as they move closer to the tender ready stage. So obviously, if we exceed the $4 million, I will be back before you talking about this further and seeing where we're at. But based on what we've seen in the past with other projects that have been estimated by our engineers, usually they're pretty accurate when it comes to the construction stage. When they get that to that detailed design stage, similar to what you've seen in Victoria, they're either we're just at the budget or under the budget. But very few times have you seen me come back here asking for more money for our capital projects of that nature. So I am hopeful that that will be the same on this one. It is based on growth, the need for storage, as I mentioned in my briefing, but we are there. That's the difference. I don't have to factor in commercial, institutional, industrial to get to the 6,000 person threshold based on our building starts. We are there. So it's not as if we are, thinking we might get there. We're actually there. So we need to get going on this to be compliant with the ministry direction. With respect to bridges and box culverts, of course, this item has been brought forward many times before. And as much as it was a simple thing to do maybe 30 years ago to just go in there and throw a box culvert in a river or a creek and everybody'd turn a blind eye to it, that's no longer the case. There is a lot of work to do throughout the process. So when we do an environmental assessment on our bridges, we look at all the options, as we have done on the last several big projects we've done, and we do look at the culvert option. But when you start looking at the soils underneath the creek or the fish habitat and the repercussions that in dealing with the Department of Fisheries and Oceans in dealing with the impact on fisheries, it quickly turns out that, one, it's a longer process to get an approval for installing a box culvert than it would for just redoing a bridge on abutments. And two, there's no guarantee that you'll get the approval from the Department of Fisheries or Oceans and the Ministry with regard to allowing that to proceed. So you may be going down a route that's one, more lengthy, and two, further into it, you're going to find out you can't, and they want you to rebuild the bridge on the abutments because it has less of an impact on the fisheries. So it has not been deemed to be viable so far based on cost and potential for failure and the length of time that it would take to do whenever we have bridges in poor conditions that we need rehabilitated quickly. That's what I have to say.
Excellent.
On that.
Thank you for those comments. Did you have anything you wanted to add? No? Okay. So moving on, Mr. Clivatti, did you have comments or questions?
I just have one.
If you don't mind using... Eyes. No, that's how we're recording is through these guys, so... And you just hit the button there on the bottom.
Got it.
There
I think I go. Got it. Thank you.
Perfect.
I just wanted to say that I've looked at the information that's been provided to it. Just like to point out that my family have moved 28 times. And I've seen all sorts of countries. I've seen all sorts of villages, towns, big cities. And I'd like to congratulate you and thank you very much, both you and your staff, for the type of information we get ahead of time. It's absolutely superb, clear, and quite consistent. I'd also like to say that you should all be aware right now that a survey has been completed nationally and passed around that the rates or the property that you own has gone up 21.2% in the last year and a half. And when you look at the percentages that we're talking about today, realize that when you're looking around at what these prices are. Things are going up, and the rate of inflation generally is quite high. Thank you very much, Mayor. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Paul Crozier.
Let's get it up here a little bit. Just a couple of points. First of all, thank you very much. And the information is awesome. The executive summary starts to put a little bit more focus on the work that you guys do. The spreadsheets on the older years, a little cumbersome for an outsider. I do have some university background in public sector budgeting, but mostly what I do is forensic audits of businesses up to $5 million in the farming sector. So rather than, and also I'm a big believer in infrastructure and the future. So as far as capital budgets go, I have nothing to say about that. I think on a project by project basis, you guys do what you have to do. Also, it's mentioned and noted that a lot of those costs are outside your sphere of influence, right? So we've got to sort of deal with those and decide what happens and what doesn't. I know on our committee, we're talking about road and sewer because as accessibility committee, we want to have a more, as our population ages, a more accessible community. So all those things factor in. I have two executive summaries in front of me. So I have the 2019 final budget and the 2020 final budget. So I have questions, but I do not expect answers directly today because they're very specific in nature. Okay. So the 2019 final budget has the 2017, 2018, and 2019. And I want to focus on operating costs again because capital costs are somewhat mutually agreed upon. And if you just look at the top four expenditures, they are remuneration, salaries and benefits, materials and contracts, debt repayment, capital expenditures. Without understanding completely what's in each of those line items or discussing, sunshine lists or any of those ridiculous things here today, I want to focus on just what the increases have been so that we can peel this apart a bit. It's great to talk about taxation as only one third of your total budget, but the reality is 100% of your budget comes out of all of our pockets, so we're all in this together. From 2017 to 2018, the salaries went up 5%. From 2018 to 2019, they went up 10.2%. That doesn't mean everybody got a 10.2% raise. So I'm interested also in knowing, we're using a 2016 census at 13,000 and change. If we start allocating resources on a per household or a poor, which we do a little bit on the taxes, but if we did it on a per person basis, and the projected basis in terms of planning, it would give a person an indication of what my debt obligation might be in terms of the long-term debt. So it would be very helpful, I think, for you guys where you are spending money for future and doing the asset matching principle, all very important. If I knew there was, let's say, 20,000 people in our catchment now, that would help me understand why some of the escalations are happening. So that speaks to the increases that appeared on 2019. On the 2020 budget, we see different numbers, okay? So we should have an accumulated number for 2018, for example, and it should be the same as the accumulated number in the final budget or different by whatever the expenditure was, okay? So on the 2020 executive summary, 2018 was $19,983,103. The final budget that was picked for 2018 was $16,486,291. That's a $3.5 million difference, 17%. Okay, that's 2 years ago. Last year, same thing. If we compare the executive summary for 2019 versus 2020, almost identical, $3.5 million and change. So the line items are not differentiated. There's only one new line item called grant in lieu of taxes, and it's not a very large, it's 0.4 of your total. So the question is, what goes into the difference in these two calculations? Because $3.5 million is 17% difference between the two numbers. So that's not even And so if we look at the 2020 budget for, let's say, salaries, for example, we've added 5 plus 10 is 15. We've added 23.5% just to get to 2020. So number one, if all these calculations are part parcel of the same thing, forgive yourselves now for being $3.5 million over budget this year. That's a very big concern for me, because whether you're a house builder or a person in the private sector who's responsible net-net for the budget, you can't blow your budget by 20%. Because if you do that year over year, it's accumulating in the long-term debt, right? You're trying to cost control on paper taxation. And in this executive summary, and I understand some of this may come from an outside accounting firm, what you see there in that 0.000 this and that is an attempt to minimize the impact on an individual. And that's not the total effect, right? The total effect is the budget this year is either going to come in at what you put on the most recent thing, which is 31 million minus capital, which is 20.237, or in the executive summary, which was produced, which was 22.4, or if I do my correction based on the previous 2 years, you'll come in at 26 million. $6 million from top to bottom onto your long-term debt, minus if we don't get the grant for the bridge. And we are talking about a curving down of outside grants and funding. So my taxes may only go up by 2.22 or 2.5, which actually has not been my personal experience, but we won't get into that situation here. I'm 300% of the average household. So, and I don't live in a mansion. It's not limestone, it's not 200 years old, and it's not 1,000 acres. But there's also probably curvilinear effects in assets above that 350,000. So we'll set that aside. From a budget perspective and the long-term debt, I think most of the long-term debt is explainable by capital projects. And it's more about the operating costs. And the then when we get back to comments about sustainability and targets and driving change, how do you plan to drive change if you can't service your debt? There's got to be ways to you know, come in at 100 cents on the dollar instead of 125 or 130. I'm not sure what the answer is, and I'd be willing to sit with anybody and go through these numbers and find out what the differences are. But two executive summaries, restated final results by $3.5 million.
Well, thank you for your comments, Mr. Crozier. Is there anything you wanted to comment on this evening, or would you rather provide written comment and have some time to research the...
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to follow all of that because there was a lot of numbers being thrown around. So my preference would be to meet with you, if that's okay with you. Okay.
Okay, so we'll get the two of you together. Perfect. Mr. Ed Wilson.
Thank you. I'm Ed Wilson. I live on Greystone Crescent, Ramsey Township. I am speaking on my own behalf, and I do not represent any other individual or group. This public meeting is great, with input from the public, but I suggest that in future there should be public meetings, a public meeting with public input at the beginning of the budget process. At that point, suggestions could be made on priorities and areas that need attention. These could then be considered early in the budget process and not at the end when things are pretty well already decided. I sat in and observed the all-day budget meeting on November the 22nd, 2019. No public input was allowed. From my observations on that day, on November 25th, 2019, I sent a request to Mr. Kelly, the CIO, with 18 questions that I had regarding the budget. I received a response yesterday, and I have not as yet been able to review the answers given to my questions. As usual, some answers may lead to further questions. I thank and appreciate Mr. Kelly's response to my questions. but I would have preferred to have had that response much earlier. In my view, there are things that should be added to the budget, and there are areas where efficiencies should be looked at. The rural gravel roads in Ramsey and Pakenham are often very poor, very rough, and in some cases in terrible condition. They need significantly more attention than what is showing in the budget. The trail from Greystone to the Appleton Side Road. As part of the establishment of the trail, it included improvements to the Appleton Side Road from where the trail meets the Appleton Side Road to the roundabout. This work has not been done. The trail is used by people of all ages. It's well used, including seniors and children. I suggest that this is a major safety issue. I request that these improvements be added to the budget for 2020. The trail is terrific, but it never should have been completed without the improvements to the Appleton Side Road. The budget. The percentage increase in taxes is compounded. I looked at the projections, and as an example, an increase of 10% followed by an increase of 10% is not 20%. It's 22%, or 21%. 10 plus 10, when it's compounded, and it is compounded, is 21%. Look at the long-term financial plan, and don't just add the percent increases. They are compounded. From 2012 to 2020, the increase is 55%. I really wonder how many people had their pay increased by 55% in that time period. The plan for 2020 to 2030 is more modest, but includes tax increases every year of 2.5%. And again, it's compounded. 10 times 2.5 is not 25, it's 28%. On top of the 55%, this is an increase of 98%, essentially double the taxation over the full period. And remember, this is on top of the increases in property assessment, which is going up every year, and it's going to be going up significantly in the next year or so because assessments have, property values have really gone up, and the taxes you pay, the increase on the assessment, you have the increase on the assessment plus the increase on the taxation rate. I suggest that council should look at efficiencies in all areas and reduce the increase in taxes to 0%. My understanding was that the large increase of 7% every year for 5 years in the long-term financial plan was to build up a reserve that could be used instead of long-term debt borrowing. Council should look at the reasons why the intended reserve amount has not been achieved. I suggest that a line of credit should be used in place of having reserves. The reserves are really taxpayers' money, which could be used by the taxpayer, and instead is sitting in an account and earning a very low rate of interest. Also, I'm still not clear, what is the actual amount of reserves that are in an account in the bank? Not including any money that is for a specific item, such as a carryover from the previous years, what is the actual amount that's in the bank? Was already mentioned the water holding tank at $4 million. And population growth has never in the past been as high as predicted. They come out of prediction, but it never has turned out to that in the past, and I don't see that happening in the future. That project should be delayed. Put about $1 million into a reserve, and then not have to acquire a long-term debt in 2020. Put it off at least till 2021, at least. Thank you for listening. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anything that staff would like to comment on now, or yes? Director of Public Works.
Thank you, Mayor Lowry. With respect to the rural gravel roads, as was mentioned during the budget process last year, the year before, previous versions of council, and we're dating back here 10, 15 years, used to take away money from the rural gravel road projects whenever there were was a deficit in that needed to be balanced in the budget. So what happened is we got away from doing each and every gravel road once every 5 years. Through the last council and into this council, the investment into gravel roads was increased. And we are on back, getting back on that track to get the gravel roads looked at once every 5 years. And that's in keeping with the, we put roughly 5 inches of gravel, new gravel on when we redo a road properly. And you lose about an inch of gravel a year based on the traffic that runs on it, plowing operations and whatnot. So we're getting there. We're still playing a little bit of catch up, but we're getting back to that once every 5 years. So, and that will definitely improve the quality of our gravel roads moving forward. With respect to the water tower, I'm not going to reiterate the comments that I made before, but we aren't crystal balling anymore. We're there. That's it's not a question of we think growth is going to be this much. We have reached the threshold where we're reaching deficits, storage deficit. So it's not crystal balling anymore. Public Works had some minor involvement in the Greystone Trail in the actual construction of it. To my knowledge, there was only supposed to be a paved shoulder on Appleton Side Road, which was discussed with the county. But we weren't involved otherwise in that project. But there was never any intention to build any type of sidewalk from the traffic circle down to the Greystone Trail in the short term.
Thank you for the comments. I would just add one point of clarification for you, Mr. Wilson, too. You had mentioned about the long-term financial plan and the 7% increases to the revenue over several years. I would note that the long-term financial plan will be updated by this council as well, so it will be an opportunity for comment there. But the increases were to address the infrastructure gap, the deficiencies in the infrastructure, and I think the treasurer outlined quite a few of the results of that asset management plan, so we can certainly provide you that information if you haven't had a chance to take a look at it before. And last on our list, we have Ms. Susan McCauley.
Hi, I'm Susan McCauley, and I live on Mitchison Street in Elmont. And I just wanted to say that I really appreciate all the hard work that's been done by the treasurer and her team and council in trying to come to decisions on dividing up a limited pie, which essentially is, I think, what it comes down to. And everyone wants a bigger piece, and there are only so many pieces, and there's only so much pie. So I'm really appreciative of all the work that you've done. I'm happy to live in Elmont. I think you're doing a great job. It's a fantastic community, and I suggest that we continue to collaborate to make it even better than what it already is. Thank you.
Thank you. A lovely comment. Thank you. Is there anyone who hasn't spoken already this evening who might have a question or comment that they would like to share this evening? You can also submit in writing any questions or comments if that's more comfortable for anyone. Okay, well, with that, let me get back to the top of the agenda. So that would be the end of our meeting then. And I'm looking then for a mover and seconder for the confirmatory bylaw. Councillor Girard, Deputy Mayor Minnelli, all those in favor? Thank you. And adjournment, mover and seconder for adjournment. Councillor Holmes, Councillor Delgatty, all those in favor? Thank you. We're adjourned. Thanks for joining us tonight.